Welcome back to News and Views here in News Talk 1010 WCSI and 98.1 FM. I'm News Director John Clark. News and Views is brought to you each week by the Columbus Area Railroad Club located in Johnson County Park. This morning, we're talking with the candidates for state representative for District 59. District 59 covers most of Columbus and Bartholomew County. There is also District 57 in northeastern Bartholomew County, which is uncontested. And we have District 69 in the very southern part, which has a contested race between Republican Jim Lucas, Jeffrey Pruitt, the Democrat, and Katrina Cat Hardwick, the Independent. This morning, I am talking here in the studio with Ryan Lauer. Ryan, thanks for coming in this morning.
Well, great to see you, John, and it's very nice to be here in person in the studio. These days, it's unfortunately more rare that we're having contact with people and in person to person, and things are starting to open up, and it's just a pleasure to see you. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Can we talk, for people who may not be familiar with you, a little bit about your background and why you're running for re-election to the State House?
Well, thank you. And yes, I currently serve the residents in Columbus and Bartholomew County as state representative, and I am honored to have that responsibility, especially in these very difficult times. So I've been working very hard for the people and to make sure that we are keeping our businesses open, and schools is very important that our kids are in school. I also am focused on helping all of those residents and my constituents with a lot of issues we've been having during the pandemic, and I hope we get a chance to talk about that. But I served for back in 2010. I was elected to the Bartholomew County Council. I served as president of the council. I'm very focused on making sure that people are well represented up at the State House, and I do my very best to give Columbus and Bartholomew County a very strong voice up at the State House. And here, I just love promoting and talking about how wonderful our community is. And we have such a great reputation throughout the state that I work very hard to maintain and make sure that people understand what wonderful things we do here. And you know, a great place to raise your family, a wonderful place that's growing and getting jobs and expanding our businesses and bringing new businesses in. And those are some of the focuses that I've had. My family, my wonderful wife, Blair, she's been doing just an amazing job with my four little ones. I have three girls and a boy, six and under. And so that keeps us busy as well. And as many people, or all of us, have experienced during this pandemic, having to adjust our lives, make changes, and, you know, it's been difficult on so many people, and it has affected all of our lives. And I have a lot of empathy for the people out there as to what they're going through, and hope that things keep improving, and that we can get to a point in the future where we are getting together again and being out there and getting back to a normal life.
Ryan, for people who may not be familiar with you, haven't talked to you before, can we tell our listeners just a little bit about your education and your day job outside of the legislature?
Yes. Well, I have a degree in biochemistry from Indiana University, and in fact, there's not too many up at the State House with my background and experience in math and science. Graduate school at Indiana University as well in what's called chemical informatics, and also studied a lot in mathematics. My father was a math and physics professor, in fact. but you know, what I'm focused on is making sure that all of us have the opportunities to get educated, to get the best quality education throughout Indiana. And that's one of the focuses I've had up at the State House. And in terms of our legislature, Indiana, I believe, does it right. We have a part-time legislature, so everybody that I serve with up at the State House has a real job. And so that brings a lot of various perspectives and skills to the State House. And I think my contribution in the terms of science and especially during this pandemic, having a background in biochemistry and has allowed me to have responsibilities and work with other members on some of the details and various issues that have come up during the pandemic, and whether it's from PPE, making sure that our schools and businesses and government agencies had the appropriate protection and safety protocols, working very closely with the administration, with Governor Holcomb. And to be honest, we have gotten everything that I have asked for our constituents here from the administration. And, you know, we may talk about some of that, but it's I think, a very important way that the Indiana legislature works, because we're all in the real world. I'm not a career politician, and it's something that brings an added level of diversity and I think breadth of skills and understanding up there that makes, I think, Indiana run very well.
With the pandemic and the up and down the government ladder, there's dire warnings about upcoming shortfalls and budget challenges going ahead. What do you see ahead for how that's going to affect the state and state finances?
Well, you look around the country, and you know, there are even neighboring states that had trouble paying their bills before the pandemic. I'm very proud that we have a Republican legislature, and I'm obviously a part of that. We have a long track record of balanced budgets, of being fiscally responsible, and that's something that I worked very tirelessly up at the State House to make sure that the taxpayers, that my constituents, are getting the best bang for their buck for their tax dollars up at the State House in Indiana. So, you know, you go back to our budget session just last year, and Indiana was growing and our economy was booming, the best we'd ever seen. And here in Bartholomew County, we were breaking all records for unemployment and job growth. And, you know, one of the things I'm fighting for is getting back there as quickly as possible. The budget of Indiana, you know, there was, going back last year, a vigorous debate in the House between the opposition and the Republicans on how to spend your money. And here are some of the things that we did that I'm very proud of. We gave the largest increase to education in the history of Indiana, $750 million of new money. And, you know, that was meant for every single school and every single community to have more money available. And we wanted that to go towards teacher pay, and by and large, it did. In fact, here in Bartholomew County, our schools, 100% of the teachers have received raises and will this year and next year. And also preparing for any contingencies, right? So a big fight that we had was the $2 billion that we had budgeted to maintain our reserves. So Indiana is the envy of states in that we had the budget to meet our priorities, but also had $2 billion set aside for any contingency. Of course, nobody could foresee what was about to happen. And so I'm very proud that we maintained healthy cash reserves. And I'll tell you what, when it came to the economy being shut down, to the pandemic affecting everyone's lives and what we had to do to help Hoosiers in need, to protect our first responders and all levels of services, our government, helping the people, the ability to have the resources available to do all of that was extraordinary. And in fact, it was a number of months before we even had to touch the reserves. And I'm very encouraged at the numbers we're seeing. Of course, we're working very closely with our local governments, our cities, our counties, in preparing for our next budget session, where we are expecting that we're going to have to reprioritize and possibly make some cuts. But it's not looking as bad as it was back in March, April, May, where we were looking at 10% or higher. I think every time since then we've had budgetary forecasts updated, things increasingly look better and better for our financial situation in Indiana. And one of the things that you can see is, for instance, here in Bartholomew County, they were able to actually increase the budget for our local government. And I think with the combination of our reserves and the fact that Indiana, I think, struck an appropriate balance during this pandemic where we weren't completely shut down. I mean, you look north, you look west, you look at some of the other states across the country that are still shut down, that have kids that haven't been to school in almost a year. People around this country, businesses, know that Indiana is well managed, that we're stable, and that we are poised to take advantage of what I hope is the enormous economic revitalization that is just around the corner. And even during the pandemic, we've been continuing to see jobs pouring into Indiana from outside, from other states, our existing businesses expanding and adding more employment, adding more jobs. And this is a big part of what is going to be needed to make sure that we can get right back to it as we turn the corner on the pandemic. We want to make sure that every Hoosier has the opportunity, has the skills and the education to realize your dreams, to realize the American dream. And that is happening in Indiana. And I'm very excited to see what we have in store for our future.
I know that Bartholomew County has talked about the struggles they're having with the road funding because of the drop in people not driving, which means less gas tax, which means less money for local road improvements and state road improvements. Any thoughts on how we're going to address that? What should be done to keep the roads in shape in this new environment we're in?
That's a great question, and Indiana has been a leader in the nation in these last few years, especially on infrastructure, and everybody can see we've had 65 widening left and right. We actually have another project kicking off from Walesboro to Columbus, making that a triple lane as well. We just realized, I think, a very significant project. And one that I kept a close eye on and can't say enough good things about how our city and the state and the contractors involved worked together to realize the overpass. That was a $32 million project that had partnerships with private industry and had partnerships with Indiana, the state of Indiana, with NDOT and the city of Columbus. So we have been making enormous investments throughout the state. Our governor Holcomb did what's called community crossing grants, and Bartholomew County and Columbus have realized multi-millions of dollars in additional funding on that. Now, your question on the revenue sources, and it is true that we've had a decrease in drivers on the road, and that is translated to some reduction in the revenues that come from the pump. But in fact, there are other revenues that have been keeping up and doing well. And I do keep pretty close on the budget numbers coming in. And the effect of when you take all the funding revenue sources for our roads, it's looking better than we were expecting, especially, you know, again, going back to March, going back to April. We're seeing every day we're seeing increased utilization of our roads, and we're also seeing that we've got people starting to get back out again, starting to travel again. But there's no doubt that there will be some hit to the revenue coming from the gas pump, but that's one of the things that we will have to address during session. It's my priority that we continue being forward-looking on addressing our infrastructure, our bridges, our roads, our local funding. I would like to see an increase in the local funding for our roads and bridges and infrastructure. And that's something that I think is a priority to maintain and keep going on what we've been doing with the infrastructure here in Indiana. And as the crossroads of America, that's something that we need to do. And it just drives business. It drives tourism, which is something that is one of the industries that obviously was hit the hardest, are also a service industries. And one of the things that we need to do is just keep focus on that and make sure that our local communities have the resources they need to pave the roads. After winter gets through, we're going to see more issues with roads that we'll have to address, as we always do. And I think my experience in local government here in Bartholomew County was very helpful to understand the it is a little complex, the funding formula, but understand what are the levers that we can adjust to make sure that we maintain strong and safe roads.
Some of the other states, even neighboring states, have had protests and anger over the local governments, the state governments, instituting things like face masks and the lockdowns and what have you. Do you think Governor Holcomb should have used emergency powers to do that? I know there was some talk about the from some legislators about that this should have been a legislative decision to make those moves. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, I hear a lot from constituents on both sides of the decisions that were made at the executive level with Governor Holcomb. And I'll tell you, and I've heard other sentiments that Governor Holcomb has actually been a very good partner with the legislature. It is a reality, however, under current constitution and state law, that in order to call a special session for the legislature to convene, the governor has to do that by law. Obviously, we have not gotten to that point. Maybe I'll break a little bit of news here today, but I think my hard work up at the State House, the leadership appointed me a couple of months ago to be part of a working group in the legislature to see if we need to make some changes to the area of emergency powers and executive authority in the executive branch. And we are ready to roll out our proposals, which I think will be will have bipartisan support, to make some adjustments to the ability of the executive branch to continue re-upping year after month after month in these circumstances. So when you look back, you know, we look back to 1946 and before in all the laws and legislation that are on the books for these types of situations. And one thing I like to emphasize is that there's very few emergencies that, you know, we cover various scenarios in the current code on. So when we have emergencies happen, whether it's tornadoes or floods and things are that happen that are difficult, and the state needs to be a part and help our local communities, there's not really many circumstances where it affects all Hoosiers at once. And a pandemic, obviously, we're in a situation that is the case. So under the current under the current law, the executive of Indiana has the ability to call an emergency, but has to renew it every 30 days. So that's why we've seen every 30 days or so a renewal or an adjustment, or a phasing out, if you will. We're now in stage 5 of the governor's plan. And what we will be looking at doing in legislatively is to have a certain point where the legislator must be involved. And I'm looking forward to bringing that legislation forward. And session will be starting soon. And once that happens, we'll, as usual, have vigorous debate and work very closely with all of our counties in figuring out what's the right balance for these situations. So I agree that it is important for our branches of government to be involved, and we have been involved, very involved. I'll tell you what, at the very start, on day one, honestly, of this pandemic, our governor set up a direct line for me and other members to his office, to him directly. And it's also nice to have a very close working relationship as well with Governor Holcomb, before the pandemic, that is. And it's, you know, throughout this emergency situation, throughout the pandemic, I can confidently say that that our executive and legislative branches have worked very closely together. Everything I've brought to our leadership in the State House and to our governor has been addressed and satisfactorily, and I'm very grateful for the things that that we've been able to accomplish. Another example of that is from day one, really, I thought it was very important that Columbus have a free testing site for the coronavirus. And, you know, got the governor involved, worked directly with him, and we were selected as having a free testing site here that was previously at the Armory early on, and now at the Fair Oaks Mall. You can get tested anytime for free. And I think that's been a very crucial component of us, first of all, understanding at first, what were the biggest challenges that we could face head on with this virus? And we've learned a lot as this has gone on. I'm very sympathetic to those who think that we need to keep going forward. And I want to make sure that we're safe, and that our businesses, that our first responders, that our medical and our hospital work very closely with our hospital to make sure that we have the resources that we need to be safe. And I'm very confident that Hoosiers understand what to do. And Hoosiers, and I'm very, very strong proponent that we as individuals make the choices that we feel and know are the best for us and our family. And at this point, I believe that everybody has enough, has the information, knows how to protect themselves and how to navigate and protect their businesses and their employees, and continue to work with our local governments and health departments and our state government. But I think we need to continue in the direction we're going to keep looking forward to the day where we can get back to it, into a more normal life, a normal situation. And there's always risks in life, and we need to be continually focused on the most vulnerable, our seniors. If you're a senior and you have some underlying additional health conditions, there are certain populations that have a much higher risk for this virus, and we need to continue that effort. In fact, there was an announcement just the other day of bringing the National Guard in, and is bringing the National Guard to bolster our needs for our long-term facilities, our nursing homes. And they've been the hardest hit. Our seniors, during the lockdown situation, the stories are difficult, are very difficult. Families not being able to embrace their loved ones. The not having the knowledge of what is what is going on in these facilities while we're in the height of the pandemic, when you have a loved one in there, and these are some of the issues that I think we need to continue to focus on. And at the same time, we need to make sure that our state keeps opening, keeps getting back to it. And see, John, there's a lot of hidden costs to these, to the reality of shutting down the economy, the business, our businesses. And thankfully, I'm so grateful our schools were open, that we decided to open our schools. There's nothing, I think, more important than our children getting continual quality education in person. But when you get down to it, the economy and the hidden cost of the shutdown, we've got a massive increase, unfortunately, in domestic violence. I sit on the Family and Children and Human Events Committee up at the State House, and work very closely, and have during this pandemic, issues, whether at home or in situations where our most vulnerable children in the foster system, and they've had a rough time, and we need to focus on these vulnerable children. We need to focus on our seniors and those at highest risk in this pandemic, and focus on the economy, because there are still people that are out of work, that have the skills, that have the background, that want to get back, and for one reason or another are out of work. And one of the things that I see as my responsibility, and I work very hard. I work every day with constituents that have had issues, a lot with unemployment. There was a lot, you know, back in April at the peak, we had close to 18% unemployment in Bartholomew County, you know, almost one out of five. And in a very short time, in a matter of months now, I looked it up today, actually, and happy to report that we're at 4.9%. So going from 18 to lower than 5% in just a matter of months, I think that's a testament to how solid our foundation is in Indiana, how well we've managed our government and our finances, and how attractive Indiana is for businesses. And John, we're seeing it, and there's going to be announcements before the end of the year. We've got businesses and jobs coming to Indiana, leaving some of these states that I think have not managed as well, have locked down very significantly. You look at some states are still locked down. There's children aren't in school. They never had curbside. They never had drive-through. They locked it all down. And Indiana, I think, had an appropriate balance where, yes, businesses and our workforce were, like everybody, severely affected. But we were able to keep things going at some level and continue to, and we did it shorter, and we did it more flexible than other states, and we've opened up, and we just have to keep going in that direction because it's so important for our future as a state and you know, as Hoosiers to have that confidence, to have that ability, and companies and businesses, they realize that, and they're coming here, and we're prepared. And we're looking for 2021 to be the greatest year ever for Indiana.
So one thing that the pandemic has sort of blown up and that the legislature will be looking at is the school testing situation. I know there was the addition last year of the civics test, but the scores this year aren't really meaning anything to the and in fact the students didn't even get to take the tests in the spring. What do you see going forward as far as school testing and what the legislature might decide to do about that?
Yeah, so we passed some significant legislation this year, earlier this year, realizing and I love teachers. My parents were educators. They were teachers. And I grew up in a household where that was of utmost importance, and I'll always be grateful to my parents for that. And that's come forward with me all through life. You know, teaching is the most respectable of jobs, and I appreciate what our teachers do. I appreciate, especially during these difficult times, how difficult it's been. The virtual learning was a stopgap that we had to do initially, but that's not a replacement for, especially in younger ages, elementary and earlier. That's not a replacement for the social, the learning, the ability for teachers to understand and really get the individual attention to students. So some of the things that we did this session were to decouple what the law had a tie with teachers and their pay with student test scores. And I found and we saw that it was not uniform across the state. Every different locality was doing it differently. Some making it, let's say, 5% of the total calculation, and others as high as 50% and 60%. And so we looked at that, and the feedback I've gotten from teachers, that was one of the biggest issues where they found that being more flexible on that would help them do their jobs, to let teachers teach. And I'm a strong proponent of a strong classic education, reading, writing, arithmetic, even though that notion goes back a long way, it's still so very true today. I might add STEM in there, right? But we need to continue to focus on making sure that our schools have the resources and the ability and the flexibility. Another one of a major legislation that we passed that kind of was under the radar with all the news happening this year is taking the mandates our schools had year after year, had to do hundreds of things to slip into their curriculums. We actually made those, or a substantial amount of those, optional, so that every school district can make their own decisions on what was most important to their community. And in fact, that affected over 1,500 mandates that now is, again, what I like to see, bringing local control further to our local communities of education. It's so important. And also combining that with the ability for parents and families to make the choices that are best for them to educate their children. I'm a strong proponent of school choice. And we have a very strong and a very forward history of school choice in Indiana. And that's something we actually expanded the income categories so that more people had the ability to get vouchers and assistance if they wanted to send their child to a different school. Now, we have the blessing of having quality, good public schools here in Bartholomew County. And that's not the case everywhere in the state. You mentioned test scores, and I follow that very closely. Year after year, I'd like to see better than what we're seeing on our math scores for kids and English, and we can, and you know, we're middle of the road and we're getting better, but you look at some of the school districts have zero percent passing the math and English, and that's unacceptable. You know, if you're a parent in one of those school districts, what are your options? Well, here in Indiana, you have options, and you have really good options. We have charter schools, which are public schools that just have a different framework, which gives more flexibility to those schools. Those are very popular in some of those, I'll just say it, failing districts. And the Supreme Court has weighed in on this, and they are correct in the school choice funding that Indiana provides for every family, if they so choose, that is funding for families. And then the families decide what they want to do with that funding to send them to school. Now, it's a graduated scale. If you're well off, you know, you won't be eligible at a certain point. But for the middle class, for especially lower income families, these are life-saving opportunities. These are bringing opportunities to children to do what's best for their future, so that they have a path to the brightest and best education. And it's a real focus of mine from the very beginning, because I know what good and societal benefit comes from a quality education. And I want that for every child and every parent, for their children to succeed and be able to do better than they did.
One thing that's obviously right now is a high concern of people is election security and whether their votes will be counted and counted accurately. Do you think that our elections in Indiana are secure, and are there things we could do to improve election security and accuracy?
Yes. The answer is yes. We have a strong tradition of taking our election security and really the method of voting in Indiana very seriously. There have been some concrete efforts that have gone in this past session and in our budget year. We increased the funding significantly for cybersecurity to make sure that that, especially during this pandemic, that all of our county clerks have the PPE, have the protective masks and the cleaning equipment to make sure that voting in person is safe and secure, and it is. And I can't say better things about our local government here with our county clerk Jay Phelps. Done a wonderful job. And really recognized, we're recognized at the state level for the job that we do here on elections, and election security is a big part of that. We need to be vigilant, but the national, some of the national news and national debate about election security, Indiana, I believe, has done it right and has the right methods in terms of absentee ballots and absentee voting. If you're unable to go to the polls for whatever reason, our law absolutely allows you to vote by mail absentee. We have 28 days of voting in person before election, and we've seen record numbers turning out, and that's great to see that people are taking their right to vote and vote for whomever they want to vote for. I support that, and I want to make sure that Hoosiers have every opportunity they can to cast a ballot for the person that they think will be the best to serve them. And I'm looking forward to seeing that in action here in Indiana. And though, you know, there's always a few issues here and there, and certainly we have laws on the books that you have to follow. Don't try to vote twice, everyone, because that's not good. But we don't see what a lot of the news reports we've seen in other states having what I would consider questionable methods of voting in a community in our society. Indiana, I think, has the right balance and is very secure. And I appreciate what our Secretary of State, Connie Lawson, has done. I work with her, know her very well, and worked with her at the State House on various issues over my tenure, and have every confidence that we're doing the right things to make sure that your vote counts. And that's the most important thing.
We're talking this morning with State Representative incumbent Ryan Lauer here in District 59, representing Columbus and Bartholomew County. Ryan, is there anything else that you think people should know about you or keep in mind when they're going to the voting booth?
Well, thank you, John. It's been great to see you here in the studio. I want to let people know how much of an honor this responsibility has been to serve the people of the 59th District. I've been working hard every single day for the people. My focus has been protecting the most vulnerable in our society, from children to our seniors to our, during this pandemic, you know, the most at-risk populations. Supporting our police and fire and first responders has been something, as a member of the Veterans and Public Safety Committee, has been one of the things I've been able to focus on, and honoring our veterans and our active military. Very proud of the work our first responders and our National Guard, for instance, has done for the people, for Hoosiers during this pandemic. I'm focused on getting us back to work, on resolving those that are still out of work. There are people still hurting, and I feel for them, and I'm fighting for them to get back, to get this economy rolling again. And I'm very optimistic that we will be seeing that, and we're continuing to see that. But Indiana, I think, has been managed very well. Our $2 billion that we had in reserves was essential to not have to worry about running our state and the important things from the issues that were new to everybody having to deal with this pandemic and the situation we've been in. But my focus on small business, on unemployment for those that are still unemployed, and really just proud of Hoosiers and my constituents here. And though life has been difficult, that it's part of our DNA, if you will, to trudge through it, to get things done, to work hard. And you know what? There are bright days ahead in the future. And I am so grateful for the opportunity to be able to serve the people. And for those listening, I would appreciate your vote on November 3rd.
Again, we've been talking with State Representative Ryan Lauer, the incumbent Republican in District 59, representing Columbus and Bartholomew County. Ryan, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you, John, and good to see you.
And just so you know, we did have to trim this interview for the amount of time we have on air, but you can hear the entire interview on our website at 1010wcsi.com. You're listening to News and Views here at News Talk 1010 WCSI and 98.1 FM. We'll be back in a minute with more News and Views, and I'm talking next with Dale Nowlin, who is running for State Representative in House District 59.